WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're entering flu season, and most of us at Fresh Air can't make up our minds about whether to get a flu shot. We figure a lot of our listeners are facing the same dilemma, so we decided to get some information that could help us decide. Joining us first is Robin Marantz Hennig, a medical writer whose latest book is about viruses. It's called A Dancing Matrix. Let's start with the basics, like what is influenza?
Influenza is a viral infection that causes respiratory symptoms. It causes a lot of symptoms that are similar to a cold. It makes you cough and it might make your nose run, but then it goes way beyond it. It leads to fever and muscle aches and just an all-over sense of feeling horrible. It's not what a lot of people call the flu, which is a stomach infection. There are no gastrointestinal symptoms to influenza, you know, what should be called the flu. It's a very easy virus to spread. It can live for a long time in the air, so that if you touch a surface that somebody has sneezed on a couple of hours ago, you can infect yourself. So even being in a crowded elevator or a room with a sick person makes you very likely, like 50% likelihood of getting infected as well.
Now, this year we're being warned about the Beijing flu. What is the big deal about the Beijing flu?
It seems to be an especially virulent strain of the Beijing flu. It seems to be causing more symptoms, more severe symptoms and lasting longer than earlier strains of the flu. It's called Beijing because that was the first place that it was noticed. I guess it was, I forget what year, 1992, I believe. Flu viruses are named according to where they were first discovered. And very often they're found in Asia. The thinking is that it's because in Asia there are so many people living in proximity to so many farm animals that they actually mix up their flu viruses, and so that a human influenza virus will pick up a little piece of a pig influenza virus or a duck influenza virus and change enough to be a new virus that gets a new name.
When you have the flu, how do you know if you're still contagious? Or, to put it another way, when your friend or colleague has the flu, how do you know if they're still contagious?
Well, unfortunately, you start being contagious before you know you have the flu. A day or so before you actually come down with symptoms is when you start being contagious. And then for the first couple of days when you have symptoms, you're still highly contagious. So the people who, drag themselves into work, no matter how bad they feel, are doing nobody a favor.
Now, once you've been home a few days, say your fever's over and you're going back to work, but you're still sneezing or coughing, do your sneeze and coughs still spread germs?
They don't have as many flu viruses in them because your body's antibody response has already come into play. You probably can still spread some germs, but it's much less infectious than it was a few days earlier.
So don't be a hero if you're getting the flu.
Right.
Stay
right.
Home. Two people can be in the same room with a third person who has the flu, and one of those two people will get the flu and the other one won't. Is it just a question of how strong your immune system is?
I think it's less a matter of your inner resources with influenza than it is with some other conditions. I mean, everybody knows that when you feel especially run down, you are likely to get a cold or you're likely to get, stomach flu, what we call the flu. But influenza seems to be pretty highly likely to infect people no matter what their underlying health is. So it's unclear why one person will actually get sick and the other person won't. It could be just a matter of what previous flu strains he's been exposed to. And if it's been a strain that's close enough to the strain that's going around now, his antibodies will fight it off effectively. And if it's not been a strain that's that close, his antibodies won't.
Robin Marantz Hennig is the author of A Dancing Matrix, Voyages Along the Viral Frontier. She'll be back with us a little later, and we'll find out if she's decided to get a flu shot. Our next guest has already gotten his. Dr. Paul Gleason is the epidemiologist for the Influenza Research Center at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. He says it's important for people in the high-risk group to get vaccinated. We asked him who falls into the high-risk category.
People 65 years of age or older, and people with any sort of chronic heart or lung conditions. And the lung conditions include asthma. After those conditions come people with other chronic illnesses, whether it be kidney disease or anything that suppresses their immune response, or chronic anemias like sickle cell anemia or anything like that. Next come people who are household contacts of those high-risk persons. So anyone who has, say, an elderly grandparent in the home, or who has a brother who has asthma, for instance, they should also take the flu vaccine, because if they take the flu vaccine, then hopefully that diminishes their chance of getting infection, and then they will be less likely to expose the high-risk person.
So now I understand some people are in the high-risk groups, and these are the people for whom the vaccine is most recommended. Now, do you think that other people, if they have access to the vaccine, should get it?
Yes, I think that if they want to reduce their risk of having flu and its complications, why they should take it. The only people for whom the vaccine is contraindicated are people who are allergic to eggs, because the vaccine is grown in embryonated eggs, and if a person really has an allergy to eggs, then they shouldn't take the vaccine.
You know, I think a lot of people have a fear nowadays of putting a dead virus in their bodies through a vaccine. And maybe it's a rational fear, maybe it's an irrational fear. But there is this feeling that what if we find out 3 years from now that there was something wrong with the vaccine? I think people are very worried about that. Is that an irrational fear?
Well, I think it is, yes, because, as I said, the vaccine is purified by several processes to eliminate, you know, any of the host proteins and other materials, so that it's very pure. And I think that when you consider the alternative, which is having a natural infection, which is very destructive to the epithelium of the respiratory tract, that taking the vaccine is a pretty minor affair.
Now, what about our memories of, I think it was 1976, when some people got a disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome,
right,
which left them temporarily paralyzed? Now, granted, this happened in very few cases, but it did happen, and that left a lot of people with a permanent fear of the flu vaccine.
Right. I can understand their apprehension, because I think that instance has been studied very well, at least epidemiologically, so that we know that there was about a risk of 1 in 100,000 persons who received the swine flu vaccine to develop Guillain-Barré syndrome. Now, let me just say parenthetically, it's important to remember that if you give vaccine to 30 million people over a period of about 2 months, you have to remember that, coincidentally, a certain number of people will come down with Guillain-Barré syndrome. In other words, there is an expected rate of Guillain-Barré that will occur within 30 days after vaccination. So what we're talking about is...
You mean coincidentally?
Coincidentally, yeah. That has nothing... It's just a temporal association. Has nothing to do with the vaccine at all.
What are the short-term effects of the flu vaccine, and what's the likelihood that you'll have short-term side effects?
Well, first thing, of course, is soreness to touch at the site of injection. So almost everybody gets some slight discomfort at the site of injection. Now, occasionally, and maybe about 5% of people, they'll get a little bigger reaction, so they'll have maybe a little redness and swelling at the site of injection, but that usually is gone within 3 days. Another 3 to 5% may feel a little achy, or have a headache, or feel a little weak the following day, and maybe the second day. And again, those symptoms can be reduced just with aspirin or acetaminophen. So those are fairly fairly simple and controllable side reactions. Now, one of the things that occurs, though, during this time of the year, as soon as children go back to school, there's a mixing of respiratory viruses in the community, and we have a big increase in colds, you know, throughout the community, and this occurs every place. So again, coincidentally, people develop colds, you know, in the week or so after they've had their flu shot, but the shot doesn't cause that.
Yeah, I know several people who say that they would never take a flu shot again because the one year they got it, they shortly thereafter ended up with the worst flu they've ever had.
Yeah, right, right. Now, the other thing that occurs...
So you think that's coincidence when that happens?
Yeah, well, there is a circumstance where they might really have gotten the flu, and that would be the circumstance where they wait until flu is already in their community. It's already epidemic in the community. And then they say, oh, gosh, I got to go down and get my flu shot. So they go down to their doctor and get a flu shot, and then 3 days later they come down with the flu. Well, the thing that they have to realize is that protection doesn't start immediately, that it takes at least 2 weeks for them to mount a good immune response, at least 2 weeks, to the vaccine. So that if they wait until flu is already in the community and they get exposed, then they may go ahead and get the flu despite the fact that they had the vaccine, you know, within a week.
Mm-hmm. What about people with HIV? If people are HIV positive, should they get a flu shot because their immune systems are endangered, or is that a reason not to get the flu shot because, you know, they're being injected with a virus?
Well, they are definitely recommended to have the flu shot. Now, if they just have HIV infection and don't have AIDS, they will respond just as any person their age would respond to the vaccine and make good antibodies. If they do have AIDS and are in the immunosuppressed phase of the disease, then their response to the vaccine will not be optimal, but they still will respond, and they're recommended to have it. Now, the good news is, though, that much to our surprise, people with AIDS do not appear to be particularly vulnerable to influenza like they are to some other virus infections.
Dr. Paul Gleason is the epidemiologist for the Influenza Research Center at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. More on the flu after this break. This is Fresh Air. Let's check in again with medical writer Robin Marantz Hennig. Her latest book is all about viruses and viral research, so we wanted to know if she was going to get a flu shot.
No, I'm not, and my kids aren't getting a flu shot either. It seemed to me when I weighed the pros and cons of getting vaccinated that it really wasn't worth the uncertainty about whether the vaccine would even work and the limited value. You know, if I got a flu shot this year and it kept me from getting sick this year, I would have to get it again next year because the immunity doesn't last for very long.
Now, what is the uncertainty you're referring to about whether the vaccine will work?
Well, the flu virus changes a great deal from one year to the next. And so when scientists are coming up with what they're going to put in this year's vaccine formulation, they have to make basically an educated guess based on what they think this year's flu virus is going to look like. That means they have to look around the world and see what is out there infecting people 6 to 8 months before it comes to this country. Our flu season is usually the winter, running from about December to March. But they have to start making a vaccine beginning the previous spring. So it's only apparently about a 50-50 chance that they've even made that guess correctly, that they even have put into the vaccine the kind of flu strain that is going to start infecting us. Then once they give you that vaccine, it's only up to about 70% or 80% likely that you're going to develop the antibody response that will keep you from getting sick. In other words, you could be getting a vaccination and get sick anyway. Then the biggest reason to get a vaccination is if you're in one of the high-risk groups that the CDC talks about. You know, if you're over 65, if you've got chronic infections, if you've got a problem with immunity already. If you're basically young or youngish, as in my case, and basically healthy, the flu isn't going to do much more than sort of lay you up for a week or two. And it's better for you to get the natural infection and develop your own natural immunity.
What's the difference between your natural immunity that you would develop if you got the flu and the immunity that you would develop if you got the vaccine?
Well, they're similar. It's an antibody response. Your body builds up antibodies that are designed to fight off the flu virus that it's been exposed to. But for some reason that they don't really understand yet, the antibody response is less vigorous when it's in response to a vaccination. The flu vaccine uses what's called a killed virus. It's pieces of the flu virus, but it's not really a live virus. This is to make it safer, but it also makes the immune response less hardy. So the antibodies that are created for some reason disappear after about 9 months or a year, and you have to get vaccinated again. When you've got exposure to a normal, full, live flu virus, the antibodies that you create are maybe more plentiful. I'm not quite sure of what it is about it that makes it more robust, but they last for basically your whole life.
Oh, for your whole life. But
they last for your whole life against that very strain of flu.
But what are the odds are that you'll see that strain of flu again?
Well, it's virtually nil, because as part of its strategy of survival, the flu virus mutates and changes slightly from one year to another, and you basically never see the exact same strain a second time.
So what good are those antibodies going to do you?
Well, you see usually the changes are relatively minor, and so if you see a very close relative of that exact same strain again, the antibodies that you've got will keep you from getting very sick. That's why the big fear is that the flu virus will change in a major way, will do something called an antigenic shift, so that it's totally unrecognizable to anybody because nobody has seen anything like it before. And none of the antibodies that anybody has developed will provide any kind of even limited protection. That's when you get what's called a pandemic flu, like the one in 1918 that killed so many people.
Now, lots of people have what might be an irrational worry, but lots of people have it, that they don't want to put any kind of virus, even a dead virus, into their bloodstream, and that enough things have gone wrong in the history of modern medicine. They're concerned maybe we'll find out, in 2 months or 2 years or 10 years that there was something not quite right about the supply of vaccine. Is that irrational?
A lot of people might be remembering stuff like the swine flu vaccine campaign. You remember that from 1976?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that was the first and last time that I got a flu vaccine. I bought into all of that, partly because my boss let me take my lunch hour to go do it. It just seemed like the patriotic thing to do at the time. But it turned out not only did we not have a major epidemic of swine flu, but there were many cases, about 1,000 cases, of Guillain-Barré syndrome, a side effect of getting vaccinated with a virus, in this case a flu virus, but it's happened with other vaccinations as well. Now, when people are looking at it in retrospect, they realize that the large number of Guillain-Barré syndrome cases came about because there was a large number of vaccinations during that episode. But that is still a risk, a slight risk, but a risk for people who get flu vaccine.
Now, if you were in a high-risk group, would you think twice about getting a vaccine?
No, I'd get it right away. My parents are both over 65, and my father has kidney disease, and I've encouraged them for years to get a flu vaccine. And they do. And that's part of the reason that, I guess, as sort of a public-spirited thing, I don't rush out to get one, because I know that the doses need to be available for the people in high-risk groups who really do need it. Unfortunately, a very small percentage of those people, I think I've heard like 20% or so, actually get vaccinated. And those are the people for whom this public health message really needs to go out, that they do need the vaccine, because influenza, common as it is not a harmless illness. It causes up to 20,000 deaths or so a year, even in an ordinary year when it's not an especially virulent kind of strain going around. And this year, people are worried that it might be an especially harsh strain of influenza.
How does flu lead to death? What are the deaths caused by?
I guess it sort of weakens the respiratory system to begin with. It's a respiratory infection that goes to the lungs and nasal passages and throat. and sort of sets you up for secondary infections, either bacterial or viral. So most of the deaths are caused by these secondary infections like pneumonia. Most of them, like 90% of them, are in older people. That's why they're considered the high-risk group.
You live in one of the neighborhoods where they're giving flu vaccines in grocery stores or supermarkets. What do you think of the idea?
Well, if it were an unmitigated good, if everybody knew that what they really needed was to get a flu vaccine, then it would be great because it's very convenient. The cost is pretty low. I think it's about $15 at my neighborhood Giant, and you can, you know, do it all at once. You buy your lamb chops and you get your flu vaccine. The problem is that when they advertise it, they don't make any kind of designation of who should and who shouldn't get it. They don't. I don't know how much information they give at the site. And the only way that they limit it is they don't give it to children, at least in the Washington, D.C. area. Anybody else who feels a need for it can just roll up his sleeve and get it.
Would there be any reason to think that you would be better off getting the vaccine from your doctor than at some kind of public setting? Is it all the same serum?
Yeah, I think that the formulation is the same no matter who gives it to you, and I don't think that, you know, paying $50 for it makes it any better than paying that $15 for it. I just would like to make sure that in a more public setting there's still enough education. People know what side effects to look for and know what the possible hazards are and whether it's something that's worthwhile.
Well, I wish you a healthy winter.
You too, Terry.
Thank you very much. Robin Moranz-Hannig is the author of the book A Dancing Matrix, Voyages Along the Viral Frontier. Earlier, we heard from epidemiologist Dr. Paul Gleason. Well, I hope you have a healthy winter. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.